Welcome, everyone, to today's podcast of Personal Growth Recipes with your host, Ron Dener. Now, this will be the second episode of a two-part series on how to stop worrying and start living. It's based on a book by Dale Carnegie. Now, today's podcast will consist of two parts. The first is seven ways to cultivate a mental attitude that will bring you peace and happiness. And the second part is six ways to prevent fatigue and worry and to keep your energy and spirits high. Let's start with part one. And rule number one is to think and act cheerfully and you will be cheerful. Now, the following eight words can transform your life. And those eight words are, our life is what our thoughts make it. Now, the biggest problem that you and I have to deal with, in fact, almost the only problem that we have to deal with, is really choosing the right thoughts. If we can do that, we will be on the right road to solving our problems. Now, am I advocating a Pollyanna attitude toward all our problems? No, unfortunately, life isn't so simple as all that. But I am advocating that we assume a positive attitude instead of a negative attitude. In other words, we need to be concerned about our problems, but not worried. So what's the difference between concern and worry? Well, I can be concerned about walking safely across the street in a traffic jam. Now, I'm concerned about what I am doing, but I'm not worried. Concern means realizing what the problems are and calmly taking steps just to meet them. Worrying means going around in maddening, futile circles. You know, a famous quote says, a man is not hurt so much by what happens as by his opinion of what happens. And our opinion of what happens, really, it's entirely up to us. Another way of putting it is, action seems to follow feeling, but really, action and feeling go together. And by regulating the action, which is under the more direct control of the will, we can indirectly regulate the feeling, which is not. In other words, we cannot instantly change our emotions just by making up our minds to do it, but we can change our actions. And that when we change our actions, we will automatically change our feelings. Now, here's a simple trick to prove that it works. Now, try this yourself, okay? Stay with me here. Put a big, broad smile, honest-to-God smile on your face and throw back your shoulders. Take a good, deep breath and try to sing a song or whistle. And you're going to quickly discover that it's really physically impossible to remain blue or down while you're acting out the symptoms of being happy. Now, this is one of the basic truths of nature that can easily work miracles in all of our lives. Now, here's a simple program to follow titled Just for Today. Just for today, I will be happy. Now, this assumes what Abraham Lincoln said to be true. I love his comment here. Most folks are about as happy as they make up their minds to be. That's one of the famous Lincoln quotes. You know, happiness is not from within. It's not. Happiness is from within. It's not from a matter of externals outside of us. Just for today, I will try to adjust myself to what is and not try to adjust everything to my own desires. I will take my family, my business, and my luck as they come and just fit myself to them. Just for today, I will take care of my body. I will exercise it, care for it, nourish it, not abuse it nor neglect it, so that it'll be a perfect machine for my bidding. Just for today, I will try to strengthen my mind. I will learn something useful. I will not be a mental loafer. I will read something that requires effort, thought, and concentration. Just for today, I will try to live through this day only and not try to tackle my whole life problem at once. You know, I can do things for 12 hours that would appall me if I had to keep them up for a lifetime. Just for today, I will have a quiet half hour all by myself and relax. And I really like that, to go back in that a second. You know, for 12 hours, I can do things for 12 hours that would appall me if I had to keep them up for a lifetime. Just for today, I will have a quiet half hour all by myself and relax. And in this half hour, sometimes I will think of God so as to get a little more perspective into my life. So remember rule number one, think and act cheerfully, and you will be cheerful. Now, rule number two is the high cost of getting even. You know, when we hate our enemies, we are giving them power over us. We're giving them power over our sleep, our appetites, our blood pressure, our health, our happiness. You know, our enemies would dance with joy if they only knew how they were worrying us, you know, and getting, really, they're getting even with us, okay? Our hate is not hurting them at all, but our hate is turning our own days and nights into a hellish turmoil. You know, probably no other man in American history was ever more denounced and hated than Abraham Lincoln. Now, Lincoln was denounced and insulted by some of the very men that he appointed to positions of high power. Yet, Lincoln believed that, and this is a quote from Lincoln, no man was to be eulogized for what he did or censored for what he did or did not do, because all of us are the children of conditions, of circumstances, of environment, of education, of acquired habits, and of heredity molding men as they are and forever will be. Quote. Great statement by Lincoln. Perhaps Lincoln was right. You know, if you and I had inherited the same physical and mental and emotional characteristics that our enemies had inherited, and if life had done to us what it had done to them, we would probably act exactly as they do. And we couldn't possibly do anything else if you think about it. So instead of hating our enemies, let's pity them and thank God that life has not made us what they are. It's a good way of looking at it. So instead of seeking revenge upon our enemies, let's give them our understanding, our sympathy, our help, our forgiveness, and our prayers. So remember rule number two. Let's not try to get even with our enemies, because if we do, it's just going to hurt ourselves far more than we can hurt them. So let's never waste a minute thinking about people that, hate to put it this way, we probably don't like, okay? Rule number three is, if you do this, you will never worry about ingratitude. Now, the only way to find happiness is not to expect gratitude, but to give for the joy of giving. You know, Jesus helped 10 lepers in one afternoon. But you know how many of those lepers ever stopped to thank him? Only one. You can look it up in St. Luke. You know, when Christ turned around to his disciples and asked, where are the other nine? They had all run away, disappeared without thanks. So let me ask you a question. Why should you or I expect more thanks for our small favors than was given Jesus Christ? And that's just how it goes. Human nature has always been human nature, and it probably won't change in your lifetime or mine. So just why not accept it, right? If you and I go around grumbling about ingratitude, who's to blame? Is it human nature, or is it our ignorance of human nature? So, you know, let's not expect gratitude then. You know, if we get some occasionally, it'll come as a delightful surprise. If we don't get it, we won't be disturbed or disappointed. You know, it's natural for people to forget to be grateful. So if we go around expecting gratitude, we are headed straight for a lot of heartache. So remember rule number three. Instead of worrying about ingratitude, let's expect it. Now, rule number four is, would you take $1 billion for what you have? About 90% of the things in our lives are right, and about 10% are wrong. Now, if we want to be happy, all we have to do is concentrate on the 90% that are right, and just ignore the 10% that are wrong. If we want stomach ulcers and we want to be worried, All we have to do is concentrate on the 10% that's wrong and just ignore the 90% that's glorious. Now, what are you thinking about? I want you to think about something here. Would you sell both of your eyes for $1 billion? What would you take for your two legs, your hands, your hearing, your children? What would you take for your family? You know, add up your assets, and what you're going to find is you won't sell what you have for all the gold in the world. But do we appreciate all this? Unfortunately, you know, we seldom think of what we have. We always think of what we lack. And this is one of the greatest tragedies on earth. You know, it's probably caused more misery than all the wars and the diseases in history. And there are there's two things to aim at in life. Think about this. First, to get what you want, and after that, to enjoy it. And there's a famous quote, only the wisest of mankind achieves the second. So remember rule number 4, count your blessings, not your troubles. Rule number 5 is find yourself and be yourself. Remember, there's no one else on earth like you. You know, no matter what happens, always be yourself. You know, the problem of being willing to be yourself is really, it's as old as history. You know, you're something new in this world. Think about this. Never before, since the beginning of time, has there been anybody exactly like you. And never again throughout all the ages to come will there ever be anybody exactly like you again. Now, the science of genetics informs us that you and I are largely the result of 24 chromosomes contributed by your father and 24 chromosomes contributed by your mother. Now, the 48 chromosomes comprise everything that you inherit. In each chromosome, there may be like hundreds of genes, with a single gene, in some cases, literally able to change the whole life of an individual. So truly, we are really fearfully and wonderfully made, if you really stop and think about it. Even after your mother and father met and mated, there was only one chance in 300,000 billion that the person who is specifically you would be born. In other words, if you had 300,000 billion brothers and sisters, they might have all been different from you. Now, is all this kind of guesswork? No. It's a scientific fact. You know, you are something new in this world. You should be glad of it. And yeah, just make the most of what nature gave you. In the last analysis, all art is autobiographical. You know, you can sing only what you are. You can paint only what you are. You must be what your experiences and your environment, your heredity have made you. You know, for better or for worse, you must cultivate your own little garden. I like that. For better or worse, you must play your own little instrument in the orchestra of life. So remember rule number 5. Let's not imitate others. Let's just find ourselves and be ourselves. Pretty simple. Rule number 6 is, and you've heard this one before, I'm sure. If you have a lemon, make a lemonade. Now, a surprising number of people have succeeded because they started out with handicaps that motivated them onto great, really great endeavors and rewards. You know, our liabilities can be our assets. It's highly probable that Beethoven composed better music because he was deaf. And Helen Keller's brilliant career was really inspired and made possible, you think about it, because of her blindness and deafness. You know, everyday life can get us discouraged sometimes. But suppose we are so discouraged that we feel that there's no hope of our ever being able to turn our lemons into lemonade. Well, I'm going to give you 2 reasons why we ought to try. You know, 2 reasons why we have everything to gain and nothing to lose. Reason 1, we might succeed. Reason 2, even if we don't succeed, the mere attempt to turn our minus into a plus, it's just going to cause us to look forward instead of backward. It's going to replace those negative thoughts with positive thoughts. And it's going to release creative energy and really spur us to get so busy that we just don't have either the time or the inclination to mourn over what is past and forever gone. So the most important thing in life is not to capitalize on your gains. Anybody can do that. You know, the really important thing is to profit from your losses. And that really requires an intelligence, and it makes really the difference between a person of sense and a fool. So remember rule number 6. When fate hands us a lemon, let's try to make a lemonade. Let's go on to rule number 7. How to cure depression by forgetting yourself and becoming interested in others. Now, a famous psychiatrist by the name of Alfred Adler, he used to say to his depressed patients, you can be cured in 14 days if you follow this prescription. Try to think every day how you can please someone. You know, the most important task imposed by religion has always been love thy neighbor. You know, we've always heard that, love thy neighbor. It's the individual who's not interested in his fellow man. Really, they have the greatest difficulty in life. And really, it provides the greatest injury to others. Okay? Dr. Adler urges us to do a good deed every day. So what is a good deed? Well, a good deed is simply an act that brings a smile of joy to the face of another. Now, why will doing this good deed every day produce such really astounding effects on the doer? Because trying to please others will cause us to stop thinking about ourselves. That's the very thing that produces worry and fear. Now, you might be saying to yourself, well, but with me, things are different. You know, I live an ordinary, quiet life. I work at a dull job 8 hours a day. You know, nothing dramatic ever happens to me. How can I get interested in helping others? And why should I? What's there in it for me? A fair question. I'm going to try to answer it. However quiet or average your existence may be, I'm going to bet you surely meet some people every day of your life. What do you do about them? Do you merely stare through them, blindly through them? Or do you try to find out what it is that makes them tick? How about the clerk at the store, the delivery driver, the bank clerk? Now, these people are human, bursting with troubles and dreams and private ambitions. Now, they're also bursting for the chance to share them with someone. So do you ever show an eager, honest interest in them or their lives? Now, that's the sort of thing I mean here. You know, you don't have to become a Mother Teresa to help improve the world. If you think about it, in your own little private world, you can start tomorrow morning with just people that you meet, okay? So what's in it for you? Well, much greater happiness, greater satisfaction and pride in yourself. You know, thinking of others will not only keep you from worrying about yourself, it'll also make you a lot of friends, and you're going to have a lot of fun. So just try it. Now, remember rule number 7, forget yourself by becoming interested in others. Every day, do a good deed that will put a smile or joy in someone's face. So we're going to move on to the second part here of this series here. The second part is 6 ways to prevent fatigue and worry and keep your energy and spirits high. So rule number 1 is how to add 1 hour a day to your waking life. Now, you may be wondering, what does fatigue have to do with the subject of worry? Well, the reason is simple. See, fatigue often produces worry, or at least it'll make you susceptible to worry. Now, any medical student will tell you that fatigue lowers physical resistance to the common cold and actually probably hundreds of other diseases. And any psychiatrist will tell you that fatigue also lowers your resistance to the emotions of fear and worry. So, preventing fatigue tends to prevent worry. Now, here's a very important formula to follow. You cannot continue to worry if you relax. So, to prevent fatigue and worry, the first rule is rest often. Rest before you get tired. Now, why is that so important? Well, because fatigue accumulates with astonishing rapidity. You know, the United States Army has discovered by repeated tests that even young men, men that are toughened by years of Army training, they can march better and hold up longer if they throw down their packs and rest 10 minutes out of every hour. So the Army forces them to do just that, 10 minutes out of every hour. And your heart is just as smart as the U.S. Army. You know, your heart pumps enough blood through your body every day to fill a railway tank car. That's crazy. It exerts enough energy every 24 hours to shovel 20 tons of coal onto a platform 3 feet high. And it does this amount of work, incredible work, for 50, 70, or maybe 90 years. How can it stand it? Well, most people have the idea that the heart is working all the time. Well, as a matter of fact, there's a definite period of rest after each contraction. Now, when beating at a moderate rate of, say, 70 pulses per minute, the heart is actually working only 9 hours out of the 24. You know, in the aggregate, its rest periods total about a full 15 hours per day. So your heart is actually resting 15 hours out of 24. You know, rest is not a matter of doing absolutely nothing. Rest is repair. Think of it as repair. There is so much repair power in a short period of rest that even a 5-minute nap is going to help you to forestall fatigue. Henry Ford displayed tremendous energy into his later years. You know, he said his secret, I love this, he said his secret was, I never stand up when I can sit down, and I never sit down when I can lie down. That's a cute one. So how do you add an hour a day to your waking life? Well, it's recommended that you take a 1-hour nap sometime during the day. You know, if you can't take it during the day, if because of your job, whatever, try an hour before the evening meal. You know, an hour nap during the day or early evening, plus 6 hours of sleep at night, which is a total of 7 hours, will do you more good than 8 hours of unbroken sleep. Interesting. So remember rule number one, do what the Army does, take frequent rests. Do what your heart does, rest before you get tired. And you're going to add 1 hour a day to your waking life. Rule number two is what makes you tired and what you can do about it. Now here's an astounding fact. Mental work alone cannot make you tired. Now sounds absurd, right? But a few years ago, scientists, they tried to find out how long the human brain could labor without reaching a diminished capacity for work, the scientific definition of fatigue. And to the amazement of these scientists, what they discovered is that blood passing through the brain, when it is active, it shows no fatigue at all. And so far as the brain is concerned, it can work as well and as swiftly at the end of 8 or even 12 hours of effort as at the beginning. So the brain is really utterly tireless. So what makes you and I tired? Well, most of our fatigue derives from our mental and emotional attitudes. A leading psychiatrist stated, the greater part of fatigue from which we suffer is of mental origin. In fact, exhaustion of purely physical origin is rare. This fatigue is due to psychological factors, by which we mean emotional factors. What kinds of emotional factors make us tired? Joy? Contentment? No, never. Boredom? Resentment? A feeling of not being appreciated? A feeling of futility? Hurry? Anxiety? Worry? You know, these are the emotional factors that exhaust us. They reduce our output and give us headaches. So what is the answer to this nervous fatigue? Relax, relax, relax. Learn to relax while you're doing your work. Easy? Nope. You will probably have to reverse the habits of a lifetime. But is it worth the effort? Let me just say this. It is worth the effort, and it may revolutionize your life. So how do you relax? Do you start with your mind or do you start with your nerves? Well, you don't start with either one. You always begin with your muscles. So let's give it a try here. To show how it's done, suppose we start with your eyes and follow me on this. Lean back in your chair, close your eyes, and say to your eyes silently, let go, let go. Stop straining. Stop frowning. Let go. Let go. Repeat this over and over slowly for a minute. You know, this may surprise you. The most important organ to begin to relax is the eyes. Now, the reason the eyes are so important in relieving nervous tension is that the eyes burn up about 1/4 of all the nervous energies consumed by the body. Whoever would have thought? That's also why so many people with perfectly sound vision suffer from eye strain. You know, they're tensing their eyes. So remember rule number 2, learn to relax and begin with your eyes. Rule number 3 is how to avoid fatigue and keep looking young. Who doesn't want to do that, right? Now, one of the best remedies for lightening worry is talking your troubles over with somebody that you trust. You know, brooding over worries alone and keeping them to oneself causes great nervous tension. You know, we all have to share our troubles. Well, we have to share worry. Don't keep it to yourself. We all have to feel that there is somebody in the world who is willing to listen and able to understand. You know, why is this so? Maybe because by talking, we gain a little better insight into our troubles. You just get a better perspective. You know, no one knows the whole answer, but all of us know that, you know, just spitting it out or getting it off our chest brings almost instant relief. So the next time we have an emotional problem, why don't we look around for somebody to talk to? You know, if you're looking for how to begin, just say, just try this. I want your advice. I have a problem. And I wish you would listen while I put it in words. Now, you may be able to advise me. You may see angles to this thing that I can't see myself. But even if you can't, you will help me tremendously if you will just sit and listen while I talk it out. You know, science has shown that keeping worry inside of us will age us much faster. And no one wants to look older than we are, right? So to keep looking young, remember rule number 3. Talk your troubles over with someone you trust. Now, rule number 4 is 4 good working habits that will help prevent fatigue and worry. Now, the first habit is to clear your desk of all papers except those relating to the immediate problem at hand. Now, it is simply good housekeeping, and it is really the number one step towards efficiency. You know, the average desk is just cluttered with papers that haven't been looked at for weeks. Now, here's a simple formula to follow. And I try to do this. Handle a letter or piece of paper once. Complete it when it's in front of you the first time. You know, procrastination only leads to eventual worry. The second habit is to do things in the order of their importance. You know, if you want to be more efficient, there are 2 priceless abilities that you must develop. The ability to think and the ability to do things in the order of their importance. You know, I know from years of experience that it's not easy to do things in the order of their importance, but it's far better than winging it as you go. You know, you kind of go along there, but I could probably expand on a whole separate podcast in the future on this one subject alone. You know, doing what's important ahead of what's urgent will literally transform your life. The third habit is when you face a problem, solve it then and there if you have the facts necessary to make a decision. Just don't keep putting off decisions. You know, this problem is notorious at meetings when a group of people are involved. You know, when you have the pertinent facts in front of you, make a decision then and there. So the fourth habit is learn to organize, delegate, and supervise. Now, many business people are driving themselves to premature graves because they have never learned to delegate responsibility to others, and you know, they insist on doing everything themselves. I know personally, because this is one habit that I am trying to improve on. You know, because of this, details and confusion overwhelm people like me. You know, we're driven by a sense of hurry, worry, and anxiety and tension. It's just hard to let go and learn to delegate responsibilities. You know, as I said, I personally struggle with this one. And if we can learn this one habit, really think about this. It's going to help us develop other people. And it'll also take some of that pressure and stress off of us. So remember rule number 4, 4 good working habits that will help prevent worry and fatigue. Rule number 5 is how to banish the boredom that produces fatigue, worry, and resentment. Now, one of the chief causes of fatigue is boredom. We rarely get tired when we're doing something very interesting and exciting. Now, if you're a mental worker, you know, it's seldom the amount of work that you do that makes you tired. Now, you may be tired by the amount of work that you do not do. For example, remember the last day at work where you were constantly interrupted? You know, different things that went wrong that day. You accomplished very little that day and you went home exhausted and probably with a splitting headache. The next day, everything clicked. You accomplished 10 times more than you did the previous day. You went home fresh, more fulfilled. The lesson to be learned? Our fatigue is often caused not by work, but by worry, frustration, and resentment. So here's a simple exercise to begin the day with before you start work. And just try this. Sincerely try this. Give yourself a pep talk every day before you start work. Now, it's going to probably sound silly or superficial, but it's the very essence of sound psychology. You know, our life is what our thoughts make it. By talking to yourself about the things that you have to be grateful for, what you can do is you can fill your mind with thoughts that really soar and sing. So by thinking the right thoughts, you can make any job less tasteful. You know, think of what getting interested in your job might do for you. So just remind yourself that it may double the amount of happiness you get out of life. You know, think about this. You and I are going to spend about half of our waking life at our work. And if we don't find happiness at our work, we may never find it anywhere. So just remember that. Remember rule number 5. To prevent worry and fatigue, put enthusiasm and gratefulness into your work. Rule number 6 is how to keep from worrying about insomnia. So let's talk about insomnia. Now, we spend about a third of our lives sleeping, yet nobody knows what sleep really is. We know it's a habit and it's a state of rest, but we don't know how many hours of sleep each individual actually requires. We don't even know if we have to have sleep at all. You know, this is a crazy story. During the First World War, Paul Kern, he was a Hungarian soldier. He was shot through the frontal lobe of his brain, Now, he recovered from the wound, but curiously enough, he couldn't fall asleep. No matter what the doctors did, and they tried all kinds of sedatives, narcotics, even hypnotism, Paul Kern could not be put to sleep or even made to feel drowsy. The doctor said he wouldn't live long, but he fooled him. He got a job and he went on living the best of health for years. And he would lie down and close his eyes and rest, but he could not go to sleep whatsoever. And his case was a medical mystery that upset many of our beliefs about sleep. So one thing to keep in mind, you know, some people require far more sleep than others. There's really no one size fits all when it comes to sleep. But worrying about insomnia is going to hurt you far more than insomnia itself. Now, Dr. Nathan Kleitman, he was a professor at the University of Chicago. He's done probably more research work on sleep than any other man. He made a statement. He declared that he had never known anyone to die from insomnia. To be sure, a man might worry about insomnia until he lowered his vitality and was swept away by germs. but it was the worry that did the damage, not the insomnia itself. Interesting. One of the best cures for insomnia is making yourself physically tired by some type of physically exhausting work or exercise. You know, for me, you know, about 30 or 40 minutes on the elliptical machine or outdoor yard work, mowing the yard, does the trick for me. You know, if you have a difficult time falling asleep, consider doing some type of physical activity a few hours before you go to bed. You know, if we get tired enough, nature will force us to sleep. So remember rule number 6, no one was ever killed by a lack of sleep. It's worrying about insomnia that does the damage, not the insomnia. So, well, that's it. That concludes the second part of a 2-part series on how to stop worrying and start living. And if you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to like, share, and leave a comment down below. I invite you to follow me on Twitter at Ron Dinner. Follow me on Instagram at Dinner Ron. Subscribe to my YouTube channel, Ron Dinner. Subscribe to Personal Growth Recipes on Apple Podcasts. And please give us a 5-star rating if you've been enjoying it. And last but not least, like and share our Facebook page, Personal Growth Recipes. And be sure to tune in next Wednesday for my upcoming episode. And this is Ron Dinner, your host for Personal Growth Recipes, serving up and signing off.